From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. When John Bolton was named the new National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump, some speculated that he was picked for the position because it did not require a Senate confirmation hearing and vote. Bolton's last government position was as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations under President George W. Bush. So unsuitable a figure was he in 2005 that Republicans and Democrats united against confirming him to the U.N. position. But Bush appointed him anyway during a recess. Now, Bolton, whose super PAC is under scrutiny for possible violations of election law via the Cambridge Analytica scandal, has inspired fear among those critical of war. Bolton strongly backs regime change in Iran. He wants a far more hawkish position on North Korea and Russia. He's staunchly pro-Israel and steadfastly maintains that the U.S. war in Iraq was a resounding success. Some have called him the war whisperer, others the devil incarnate. My guest is Medea Benjamin, co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange and the peace organization Code Pink. She's a longtime political activist who's also written a number of books, including Saudi Arabia, Kingdom of the Unjust, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, and more. And she just wrote an article about John Bolton entitled 10 Reasons to Fear John Bolton. Welcome to the program, Medea.
Hey, Sonali, thanks for having me on.
So first, let's talk about the UN position and also his role in the Iraq war. It's important for us to sort of look at that background. And in the years since, he's been very vocal about his newer sort of positions. So when he was essentially appointed as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, it was with full knowledge of the fact that he was entirely against the whole concept of international law and one of the biggest critics of the United Nations, right?
Well, that's right. He made that famous quip about you could lob off 10 stories of the UN building and it wouldn't make a difference. But what was really important is to look at his time in the UN, where he was belligerent, where he's really the anti-diplomat, where he used the U.S. veto to protect Israel all the time, and where he was disliked by his colleagues who talked about how difficult it was to work with this man.
And in fact, George W. Bush, in retrospect, has regretted apparently using the political capital that he spent on appointing Bolton as a recess appointment, saying that he was basically the worst pick. This is George W. Bush. What about his opinions on the Iraq war? He's been on Fox News in recent days quite defending the Iraq war. And even many conservatives look back and realize that that was a very bad idea.
I think anybody who was a proponent of the Iraq war the way he was should be totally disqualified from future office. But the fact that he, unlike many of his colleagues, continues to say that it was worth it, that it was a good idea. When you look at the Middle East today, Sonali, it's not just the terrible destruction of Iraq that has resulted in the death and destruction of over a million people, millions of displaced, but also has spread the sectarian violence around the whole Middle East and led to the creation of ISIS. How anybody could say that the Iraq invasion wasn't one of the gravest mistakes in modern history is, I think, either absolutely ignorant or really, really dangerous. And in the case of John Bolton, it is the latter. We should not... I think it's unfortunate that when President Obama came in, there was no, quote, looking back at who had gotten us into that war, because if there was, we probably would not be looking at John Bolton in the White House starting April 9th.
Right. So, in fact, Bolton maintains that until Bush left office, the U.S. war in Iraq was just going great. And it was Obama who screwed up the U.S. war in Iraq. He was considered essentially an ally of Vice President Dick Cheney. He was also someone apparently known, according to the New York Times, who seemed willing to cherry pick intelligence. This is also critical because, of course, we know that the Iraq Iraq war was based on misinformation and on completely, on intelligence that was totally created out of thin air, he may, under Trump, do the same sort of thing, right?
Well, yes, and this term cherry picking sounds quite nice. I would use a different term, which is really lying and manipulating. Certainly, he was part of the cabal that did that to get us in the Iraq War. He also has done it in other circumstances. For example, with Cuba, he accused Cuba of developing biological weapons, which was not true. And when there were two people under him who disputed this, he tried to get them fired. So he has a history of doing this, and I think he's doing the same thing certainly now when it comes to Iran, and he might very well do it when it comes to negotiations with North Korea.
Let's focus on Iran for a bit. That's an absolutely critical issue, one of the few bright spots of international foreign policy under Obama was that the U.S. essentially had a warming of relations with Iran and a sort of a detente, and the Trump administration came in hugely critical of that Iran nuclear deal. It seems like John Bolton might be the straw that breaks the camel's back on this issue. You wrote that he backs this Iranian resistance organization that's been considered a terrorist group, Mujahideen-e-Khalq or MEK. Tell us about his links to this group and how he thinks it could actually be the factor to push U.S.-backed regime change in Iran.
Well, this is a group that is hated in Iran by just about everyone, certainly by people who support the present government, but also by people who dislike the present government. It's a group that sided with Saddam Hussein during the disastrous Iran-Iraq war. It is known for having killed a lot of people, including civilians inside Iran. It is a group that is known for having a strange cult-like leadership. And despite all of this, John Bolton considers them a legitimate opposition. In fact, at one of their gatherings in Paris, he said, next year, meaning 2018, we will meet in Tehran. He was giving the impression that this was a group that could take over from the present government. And when most people in Iran hear something like that, they think that he is crazy. It's also rumored that he has accepted a lot of money for speaking engagements from that group. They're known to give $10,000-$20,000 a pop, and he's spoken at their events a total of 8 times that we know of. So it's very disturbing that he considers this fringe group that is so detested by so many inside Iran to be a legitimate resistance group.
It's one thing to back an organization that could sort of foment regime change from the inside, but what about direct U.S. actions against Iran? In your piece, you write that Bolton wants to shred the Iran nuclear deal and bomb Iran.
Well, yes, he has come out in writings as well as talking about how that it would be perfectly fine for the United States to initiate strikes against Iran's nuclear facilities. And of course, he also says that there should be regime change in Iran. So imagine how the Iranians feel of all political stripes. And I think it's important to understand that internally, there's always been a division in the government between the more moderate forces and the hardliners. The more moderate forces are represented by President Rouhani, who was the one who helped push this deal, the nuclear deal, through, while the hardliners have always said, you can't negotiate with the West. They never stick to their deals. Well, with Bolton and certainly Trump's talks about not renewing the U.S. participation in the Iran nuclear deal, that strengthens the hands of the hardliners. It also causes an international crisis because the Iran nuclear deal is not just between the United States and Iran. It was also negotiated by Russia, China, and the European Union. And those countries have said that they are not going to pull out of this deal.
Wow. And so May 12th is a big date when, Bolton being National Security Advisor for just over a month, at that point, he has a whole month to essentially convince Trump And you may not have to work that hard, given that Trump himself has been so critical of this nuclear deal. We might be seeing an end to that deal and, you know, just undoing of all that work in about in a little over a month.
Yes, I think the European countries are working furiously right now to try to come up with some compromise with the United States, where they impose greater sanctions on Iran. But yet, that means for the hardliners in Iran, what are they getting out of this deal? It was supposed to ease up the sanctions. It was supposed to relieve the pressure on the economy. And if it's not doing that, then why should Iran stay in the deal? And if the U.S. breaks the deal, Iran has every right to pull out. So it could trigger a series of factors that could indeed lead us to war with Iran.
And of course, what makes the John Bolton, Donald Trump mix so dangerous is that Trump is the one with a finger on the trigger and is so easily or seemingly easily influenced by the last person that talks to him, with John Bolton such a hawkish and strong figure. It could really be down to these two men making decisions that impact so many countries and so many peoples. Let's talk about North Korea next. This is a country that, well, first of all, there was news just in the past few weeks that Trump said that he would be wanting to meet with Kim Jong-un, which people were excited about. What is, as far as you know, Bolton's position on North Korea, and could he undo that one bright spot that has come out of Trump?
Yes, I think it's wonderful that there is a scheduled meeting between the U.S. and North Korea in May. This is really the masterful diplomatic maneuvering of the president of South Korea, President
Right.
Park. And the North and South will be meeting in April, and that will lay the groundwork for some of the things that will come up in the following meeting in May. So there is a lot of positive momentum. Then you put Bolton into the mix. He says, well, his job is not to convince Donald Trump, but to listen to him. But really, it is the contrary. The National Security Advisor is supposed to advise the president. And when Donald Trump, Bolton has already said that he thinks negotiations with North Korea is not only a waste of time, but is actually legitimizing an illegitimate leader in North Korea, you can imagine the kind of strict guidelines that he might put down for these negotiations, which will make it very difficult to come to any deal with North Korea. So he might not nix the meeting, but he might really make it impossible to have the meeting result in any negotiations that would lead to a peace treaty between the U.S. and North Korea, which would be the most positive outcome.
You also write that Bolton would create new problems with China. And of course, Kim Jong-un and Xi Jinping of China recently had a historic meeting that suggests that if Bolton has his way, he is basically pushing China and North Korea together against the United States.
Yes, he has come out publicly against the what's called the One China policy, which is an agreement that dates back to 1972 that requires countries to choose between diplomatic relations with China and with Taiwan. He has been very close to the government of Taiwan. So that could have very grave implications between U.S.-China relations. And he's just been a hardliner in general in terms of Taiwan and its relations with North Korea, the issues around the South China Sea, issues around cyberspace, and of course with the trade issues that are going on right now between the U.S. and China, it's a very delicate time. So having Bolton's anti-China stance could lead to very poor relations between the U.S. and China.
Now, Bolton is also a strong friend to Israel. You've done a lot of work and your organization, Code Pink, has done a lot of work on Palestinian rights. But Bolton's position as a pro-Israel hawk, is it necessarily that different from the pro-Israel hawkish position of most Republicans and even, frankly, most Democrats?
No, it's identical to those positions. He was very positive about the U.S., about the Trump administration's call to move the embassy to Jerusalem. He has very close relationships with Netanyahu, but as you implying, so do most of the top leadership in the Democrat and Republican parties. But I think if you put that also in the context of the Trump administration's close relationship with Saudi Arabia, close relationship with Israel, that takes us back to the issue of Iran. So while Bolton's positions around Israel are no different from many of those in power now, he does have the momentum with Israel and Saudi Arabia to push the administration to adhere more to his line around Iran, which is something that Israel has been wanting the U.S. to take this much more hardline position. And now they might have their man that will do it.
Now, what about Russia? U.S.-Russia relations have been, well, just interesting, let's say, under Trump, tenuous under Obama. And Bolton has said that he essentially considers Russia part of the new axis of evil. The Russian interests in Syria are very much in line with the Iranian role in Syria, and considering the U.S. is also enmeshed in that ongoing and very bloody war. How do you view what John Bolton's position is or might be on both the Syria war and on Russia?
Well, one would think that he would be very anti-Russian and be more for U.S. continued involvement in Syria. But then you have Donald Trump, who said in a speech very recently that the U.S. was going to get out of Syria, that we've already done our job there of getting rid of ISIS and now leave it to others. And when he says leave it to others, I mean, one could imply that that includes Russia. So it's very unclear how Donald Trump and John Bolton will mesh their ideas when it comes to Russia and Syria.
Finally, Medea, John Bolton will be the third national security advisor in just a little over a year. And of course, the shakeups in the White House, the turnover in the White House is unprecedented. How long do you think he'll last?
Well, I'd hope that he wouldn't last for very long, Sonali. That's one thing that maybe we can wish for. Unfortunately, since it's not a confirmable position, we can't use our time to pressure our senators to not confirm him. So we only hope that he will have so many disagreements with his boss that he too will be fired. In the meantime, I think it's important for people to get out there in any ways that we can to be saying no to future wars that Bolton might want to take us into. Code Pink has a campaign called Divest from the War Machine that gets us at the basis of those who profit from these wars, including people like Bolton. So we've got to build up an anti-war movement to counter Bolton and Trump, of course.
There may be one small glimmer of hope in John Bolton not getting to his position in the White House, and that is that, according to Democratic Senator Tim Kaine, he may not get White House security clearance because of ties with Russia, which he apparently appeared in a bizarre video on gun rights in Russia. So we may explore that in a future segment. Medea, thank you so much.
Crazy times we live in.
Yes. We'll post a link to your article about John Bolton, 10 Reasons to Fear John Bolton, from our website later today. Thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be on.
My guest is Medea Benjamin, co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange and the peace organization Code Pink. She's a longtime political activist and author. Her books include Saudi Arabia, Kingdom of the Unjust, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, and more. And her latest article is called 10 Reasons to Fear John Bolton. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.